Well, thank you very much, Nick, for your characteristically kind and generous introduction. And I have to say, it's always a delight for me to come and talk to or to meet people from the Scottish SPR. In my view, this is the most vibrant and exciting and innovative society studying the subject in the United Kingdom, and indeed in Europe and possibly even worldwide. I'm always glad to be here, I'm always glad to meet you, and I'm always glad to be uplifted, in a sense, by your enthusiasm for the subject. It's wonderful to feel that strength within this society and to follow your work and follow the activities that are offered to members. It really is a great bargain for those, I think, who are able to be members here, and I wish I was able to come every month to your sessions. I've known Trish for many, many years. We've been close friends. We've done a lot of work together and so on. And she is, in a sense, the person to blame for my being here tonight, because she has been on at me now for about 3 years to come and talk on ITC. I've come and talked about other things, but I haven't talked about ITC. And I was a little bit reluctant to do so. And one of the reasons is that it almost sounds too good to be true. And so people tend to fall back upon the idea that folk are deceiving themselves when they imagine that they're getting messages through tape recorders, through television sets, through computers and so on. So that's the first thing. It sounds rather too good to be true. I will try and show that it is true, but in the end, of course, you have to make up your own mind on that. The second thing is that it's a difficult subject to talk about because although I will play some examples of voices tonight, the voices tend to be very quiet, very faint, often very hurried, and the sounds of the words are not enunciated clearly. So it doesn't make for terribly good listening in a large group like this. Also, a lot of the work that we've been doing has been on the continent. Nick mentioned Dr. Annabella Cardoso, and in fact a lot of what I'll talk about tonight is her work with which I've been involved. She is Portugal's senior woman diplomat and has virtually destroyed her career by her interest in this work. It's very, very difficult for anybody in the academic world to admit to an interest in psychical research, and I think if you're in the diplomatic corps, it's even harder. But her work, anyway, and some of the voices that she and I have produced working together will be some of the examples that I'll give this evening. Most of the literature as well is in French or in German or in Spanish. And most of the work that I've done has been in Spain, in France and in Italy. So the voices I'm afraid that I'm going to play tonight, there are only one or two examples that are in English. But my main point in trying to play these voices is to show that something is happening. Something is going on that demands explanation. And then it's up to us to decide what that explanation might be. As far as the literature in English goes, if I might make a reference to one of my own books, Is There an Afterlife, which reviews the whole of the evidence, in a sense, for survival after death, and there is quite a lengthy chapter there on ITC, and it is probably the fullest explanation in English of the language, although Dr. Cardoso has a book coming out in English shortly herself, and I'll give that reference later on. But what does ITC mean? It means instrumental transcommunication. It was a term invented by Professor Senkovsky, a German physicist, and it covers all those messages, those anomalous messages, that we receive through electronic media. The subject itself goes back some years, but my own involvement began when, in 1971, Jurgensen, and I'll talk a little bit more about him in Raudivet, and I'll talk a bit more about him in a moment too, were very, very active in this field. They were the two big pioneers in this field. And they both published very, very interesting books. And Raudivet's was translated into English under the title Breakthrough. How many people here have read Breakthrough? Only Nick. Oh, and Trish, of course. Well, how could I forget you? Yes, Nick and Trish. Well, those of you who can get hold of a copy, it is reprinted from time to time, or come across it in the library, we'll find it makes very, very interesting reading and gives a tremendous amount of knowledge and information about the subject. I became involved then in 1971 when I read Breakthrough. I thought, well, I mean, if this is true, this provides us with some of our best evidence for survival. And then David Ellis from the Society for Psychical Research published a book called The Mediumship of the Tape Recorder, in which he details his own research into the subject, and his conclusions were, although possibly there was something in it, most of the voices could be explained as, in fact, just stray radio transmissions which were being picked up on tape recorders and so on, and were nothing to do with the other world and communication of that kind. So rather regrettably, then I put the whole subject to one side. I thought, well, there's really nothing in it. But I then picked up one day in a bookshop a book by Samuel Alsop called Whispers of Immortality. Anybody read Whispers of Immortality? Poor old Sam Alsop. You know, he really devoted years of his life to this work. And when I read his book, I was so impressed by it that I wrote to him. I always try to follow up things, and I always try to stress to my colleagues, if you want to be interested in this field and learn anything about it, go out and look for the evidence. You know, don't just read it in books, don't wait for it to come to you. Go and look for it. Talk to people who have these experiences. Listen to them and then decide whether what they're telling you is true or whether it's based upon missupposition or whatever. So anyway, I wrote to Sam Alsop, and a few days later I got a reply from his daughter, Gillian Alsop, and she said that the very day that his book came out, Sam had died, and therefore I was not able, as I had hoped, to go and visit Sam and listen to some of the examples of his results. But Gillian very kindly, we were in correspondence then for some months after that, and she very kindly sent me a collection of her own audio tapes. And when I played these tapes, the voices are very, very faint but unmistakable. Sometimes you have to play a tape over and over and over again before you are aware of what it is you're hearing. It seems over a period of time that your ear becomes very sensitive, and somebody like Annabella Cardoso, who speaks six languages anyway, is a diplomat. She is really very good at picking out messages which I find hard to hear the first time. But if I listen over and over again, then I can identify what is actually being said. So my interest was aroused again, and then I tried to find out who was doing work in this subject in this country. And I heard of Raymond Cass, and I heard of Gilbert Bonner. So I wrote to both of them, and I got examples of their work, and Raymond Cass's voices in particular were very, very impressive indeed. This is going back to the 70s, the early 80s, and so on. But they were very impressive voices. And so I decided, well, okay, I'd follow this up if I possibly could. Some years later, a friend put me in touch with Annabella Cardoso, Dr. Cardoso, who was doing this work, who as a diplomat should not be doing it at all, and felt very, very isolated and threatened indeed in her career. Well, we corresponded with each other. She invited me to go over to France, where she was consul general, Portuguese consul general in France. And I went over and stayed with her, her residency there. Her studio was in the same building, and that was when I first started getting some results myself, or being with somebody who was actually getting results. Now, I'll play you one of the voices that we received. This is particularly important, and let me explain why. I was able, when I was staying with her, and on subsequent occasions, I stayed many times with her, I was able to search the gardens, I was able to search the house. There was no question of any possible fraud, quite apart from which she's the kind of person who you know is not guilty of fraud. And why should she destroy her career anyway for the sake of this material? But I wanted to try and find a method that I could test for myself. And the obvious way, really, was to ask the voices if they could repeat something after me. Now, if they could repeat something after me, that was pretty strong evidence that I was actually listening to a genuine communication. Now, let's hope that all this stuff works, but if it does, then what you will hear is me asking the voices to repeat after me, how are you? Now, of course, this is not the way. If we're doing research, this is not the way. I wouldn't be telling you what the voice is. I would say, can you hear anything? If you say yes, I would say, what is it you can hear? And you probably say, well, I couldn't really quite catch it, so I'll play it again. And then you can hear a second time, and maybe a third time. And then perhaps you can catch what's actually being said. And in part of this research, from time to time, you actually use listening panels so that you give the voices to many different people on your panel, and they all say what they think they hear. But anyway, in this case, of course, because we're hurrying, I have to tell you that what I asked the voice to say was, how are you? Now, you will hear the voice speaking, first of all, and then my voice saying, can you say, how are you? Rather stupid voice comes in, can you say, how are you? And that's me. And then, hopefully, you will hear the voice say, how are you? And then it will go on and say something else. Whether you catch that or not, I don't know. It's not easy to catch, but I will tell you afterwards what it is, and we can play it again, because these are very short. These examples are extremely short. So let's have a go with this. Might help if I turn it around the right way. What is it?
Click the icon,
David.
Twice.
That's the voice. Did you hear? The scream is Annabella. Now, it goes on to something else.
We are so pleased that you
are speaking. That silly voice is me again. Right, I'll play that again. Now, the next time you hear it, you'll probably be able to hear the word rather more clearly. So, the voice is speaking right at the very beginning. You hear it say something. Then you hear me say, can you say, how are you? And then you hear the voice repeat after me, and I think you mostly caught that. How are you? Then it goes on and says something else, and then I say, do you want to speak to Annabella? And the voice, quite faint now, says, yes. And then I repeat, yes. And the tape ends, or the transmission ends. And the squeal, as I say, is Annabella, who was so delighted, because I did not tell her in advance that I was even going to try this. We were sitting in the studio, we were getting communication, and I tried it without telling her, and of course she was so delighted at the result. That's her squeal, recorded for posterity. Right, let's have another go at this one. That's the hand. I'll explain why she says Rio de Tempo in a moment.
We are so pleased to be speaking.
To catch it. Hear the yes? Anybody tell me what it was that the voice said to me? Yes, please. Yes, like to speak to you. And then it went on and said, do you know what is true to you? Do you know? I'll play it once more. Do you know what is true to you? You'll find at the very beginning he's saying, I want to talk to you, which he repeats later on. Want to talk to you. Got it? It is, how are you? Annabella's squeal. Now he says, I'll talk to you again.
We are so pleased to speak to you.
Do you know what is true to you? And I say, do I?
Yes.
Right. Is that okay? Did everybody get that? I want to talk to you, he says, and you hear the voice say, don't talk to you. And do you know what is true to you? Do you know what is true to you? Which is typical of the rather fast rhythm of the voices. I've puzzled a lot. Do I know what is true to me? It's an incredible question. I mean, there's an awful lot there to ponder on. First of all, it's knowledge. Do I know something? And then do I know truth? And then my truth. Quite perceptive. So people who suggest that in any communication is going to be trivial, that's not at all trivial. Let's shut that down for now. So that was what convinced me, although I was in no need of being convinced at that time, because we'd done a lot of work together, that this was actually genuine, that there was no question about this. My voice is rather faint there when I say, can you say how are you? But I say, can you say how are you? And then he says, how are you? How are you? Again, that rather quick rhythm. So this was my involvement with it. And from that time onwards, in fact, over a period of nearly 6 years, I've been involved in work in this field. I suppose it has been my major involvement in survival work for the last 5 or 6 years. I've done other things as well, but this has been one of my major involvements. Now, again, if we just pick up on the history of it, Edison, Marconi, and Tesla, who were the three great pioneers of telecommunications, all three of them were interested in the anomalous material that they tended to pick up. Marconi, in particular, who used the Morse code, found that he was getting anomalous messages which could not be explained. And both he and Edison tried to build machines to capture these voices. So going back to the 1920s now, so the subject has some history behind it. But the first identifiable voices, this is particularly quaint in many ways, two Italian priests, Father Gemelli, who was head of the Catholic University of Milan, and a very, very noted scientist. In fact, the hospital there, the Gemelli Institute, where the previous Pope was treated, was actually named after Father Gemelli. So Father Gemelli and Father Ernetti were practicing recording Gregorian chants, and they were using the old reel-to-reel tape recorders. And what used to happen sometimes, of course, when you rewound the tape, it broke. And in the end, in frustration, Father Gemelli called out to his father, who was deceased, called out to his father for help, called out in frustration, "Oh, Dad, please help me." Well, when they mended the tape and they then rewound it, played it back, they heard to their amazement his father saying, "Of course I help you. I'm always with you." And Gemelli then says, "Is that you, Papa?" This is in Italian, of course, and the recorded replies, "Of course it is. Don't you recognize me? Testone," which was his pet name for Father Gemelli when Gemelli was a boy. The priests, of course, were absolutely flabbergasted by this and didn't know quite what to do, because it seemed as if this was against the Catholic Church's teaching that you don't communicate with the dead. So what they did was they made an appointment to go and see Pope Pius XII. And to their surprise, Pope Pius XII was very encouraging about it. He said to them, "Look, this is okay. Maybe this is a big breakthrough. Maybe we're going to find out more about survival. And if you simply use it for scientific research or to help the bereaved, yes, you can go ahead, continue." And from that time on, the Roman Catholic Church has tacitly really accepted the existence of these voices. I'm told the Roman Catholic Church also accepts the reality of mediumship, and that the best seances anywhere are held in the Vatican. But, no. Then we jump forward again to Frederick Jurgensen. Jurgensen was a leading documentary filmmaker, painter, and musician. And for one of his documentaries, he was recording birdsong at Malmö in Sweden. And he kept getting voices on his tape, which made the tape, of course, no use for his purposes in the documentary film. So he kept on going back and trying to record and re-record, and he kept on getting these voices. And he then, and Jurgensen was fluent in 8 languages, he then decided, well, I might as well listen to these voices and see what's being said. And he found that there were voices there in German, in Italian, in Hungarian, and in Swedish, and they were actually calling his name. And he was given, again, as Gemelli was, the nickname that only he knew, because it went way back into childhood. And it appeared that his mother was communicating with him. And he then virtually abandoned his career and spent the rest of his life investigating these voices and getting extraordinary results. And the other person who took up this work was Konstantin Raudive. Hans Bender, who was professor of parapsychology at Freiburg University, investigated Jurgensen's voices. And to do this, he used in the laboratory at the university, he used unidirectional microphones, which will only pick up the voice that's actually you want to record. It's not a wide spectrum microphone that will pick up sound from anywhere in the room. He used unidirectional microphone. He kept the electrical cables very short to avoid the remote chance that the electrical cable could act as an aerial and pick up voices. He used oscilloscopes and electromagnetic wave detectors to make sure that there was no background noise in the room that might be picked up. And he came to the conclusion, after working for some time with Jurgensen, he was adamant, in fact, that these voices were paranormal. There was no normal explanation for them. He thought that they were probably caused by psychokinesis, that is, the actual ability, the psychic ability of Jurgensen himself to impress voices on tape, because Bender didn't really believe in survival, so he tended to take the psychokinetic explanation rather than the survival explanation. And then Raudive, after publication of his book Breakthrough in his own language, was to have it translated in English by Colin Smythe, a publisher who still, I was talking to him only quite recently, publisher who still produces books in this kind of area. And they set up some experiments in London. They used Pi Radio, technicians from Pi Radio, and they recorded for 18 minutes of tape recording. And at the end of that, they found that there were 27 distinguishable voices on it. They had a listening panel there who distinguished these voices, and one of them, Sir Robert Mayer, recognised a friend of his, Arthur Chanabel, who had died recently. Now, of course, one can go on piling instance after instance after instance until it gets a little bit dull, a little bit boring, but these were the three big breakthroughs that really established this subject. It was Jurgensen's work, it was Raudive's work, and it was these experiments at the Pi Radio Studios. From that time on, interest in the subject expanded considerably and people began experimenting for themselves. And I will tell you exactly how to start experimenting for yourself if you wish to do so in a few moments. But if we move on to Marcello Bacci in Italy, because I've had sittings with Bacci, he is one of the best known experimenters in Europe, a man now in his 80s and who's recently retired from this work. But his aim was to try to bring comfort to bereaved parents. And I've had sittings there where Bacci has actually, through his radio, been producing voices, and the parents there have claimed them as the voices of their children. And it's very, very emotional. Very emotional to be there and to find out the comfort that the parents get from this. Now, one might easily say, well, all right, are we sure that these voices are happening? Are people just reading things into the sounds that they hear? Bacci uses a method, which I'll explain in more detail in a few minutes, called the direct radio voice method. Normally, for ordinary EVP, you simply set your tape recorder to run, and when you rewind it, you may get some voices. I'll go into the details of that shortly. Direct radio voice, on the other hand, you actually get the voices coming from the loudspeaker of the radio. There are very few people who get good results with direct radio voice. Bacci is one of them. And I'll play an example. Unfortunately, it's in Italian. But I'll play this example from Bacci. However, we wanted to establish, I was there with Dr. Cardoso, we wanted to establish whether there was any possibility of fraud. We were pretty certain that there wasn't, but we wanted to put this to the test. And we had Professor Feschner with us, who is a physicist, an Italian professor, and the decision was to take the valves out of Bacci's radio. Now, if the radio was picking up stray random radio frequencies, it would not be able to do so when all the valves were removed. And we had Carlos Santi, who was a radio technician with us, and Carlos Santi, with Batty's permission, took all the valves out of the radio, and we still got voices. They were fainter, they weren't being amplified, but we still got the voices being picked up. Now, I played an example of Batchy's work. Now, this is a bit more difficult to explain, but you'll hear Batchy's voice, and then you'll hear the voice of the communicator. That was a voice. That's a paranormal voice. That is. This is Batchy. That's him twiddling the knobs on his old valve radio. Still Batchy.
Ti sento volentieri.
He said they would hear you.
Raramente ti si sente perché ti ritorno. Cosa ci vuoi dire?
I hear the voice again in a moment. Hey, Batchy. With direct radio voice, you can get these lengthy conversations, which of course you can't with the tape recorder. You play the tape, you have to rewind the tape and hear if there's any sound on it. With direct radio voice, the voice coming directly from the loudspeaker of the radio, then you can have this two-way conversation. I'll just play the last bit of that again, because he actually refers to Batchy by name. I'll play it all. One needs to hear these things twice. This is paranormal. Batchy's voice.
Gregorio, cosa ci vuoi dire, Gregorio? Gregorio, cosa ci vuoi dire, Gregorio? Ti sento volentieri. Stranamente ti si sente.
We'll hear the voice again in a moment and listen, it actually speaks Batchy's name. Hear Batchy. With direct radio voice, you can get this conversation. It's still very difficult, even if one speaks Italian, and my Italian's not very good, but very, very difficult to be able to tell exactly what they're saying. This is where the experience of the researcher comes in. It can take a great deal of time. Your ear eventually gets tuned to it, and then you can hear what's being said. It always sounds to me as if these voices, as if they're slightly strangled, or as if they're speaking from the bottom of the sea through water in some way. It's characteristic. And it's characteristic of the results of many researchers. There's a lot of consistency across the board amongst researchers as to the kind of results that they get. Now, to go back to Dr. Cardoso, to begin with, she started her work because a friend of hers had lost her son in a sailing accident. A young boy in his late teens had been drowned. And the friend was obviously very devastated by this. And so Annabella, in order to try to comfort her, began to visit mediums and took the girl with her. They went to mediums together. They even travelled abroad to do this. But it wasn't terribly satisfactory. And then Annabella heard about this method of EVP. And so she formed a little group, and they started with their EVP work. Now, let me just explain what EVP is, electronic voice phenomena. It's the old kind of method that people still use, and still the easiest method. You simply find a source of white noise. Now, why should you need white noise? White noise, best way to get it is, of course, by tuning between two stations on the shortwave band. And you get this radio mush, as it's sometimes called, static, if you like. You get this sound. Now, the theory is, and it is only a theory, that what is actually happening is that the voices build up by using acoustic sounds from amongst the white noise. You know, white noise is full spectrum sound. It's the whole spectrum of sound. And the theory is, and it is only a theory, that the voices in some way use this in order to form their own speech. So you find a source of white noise, and if you think, well, yeah, if you're going to use a radio, you're going to be picking up stray radio sequences. Well, you can get tapes just of white noise, or you can doctor a radio yourself so that it will only produce white noise, and it produces static, can't pick up any signals, can't pick up any radio signals. Or you can use other sources of white noise. Running water is one of the best sources because that is full spectrum sound. So you can tape running water, use that. Go somewhere where there's a little brook or a waterfall where you can get the sounds of running water. And there are some people who get quite good results even without the white noise, including my friend Annabella Cardoso on occasions. But it's very sporadic, and sometimes you get results, but most often you don't. So anyway, you find your source of white noise, and then you start your tape running, or nowadays we use these little recorders, voice recorders, much easier, little digital recorders. So you start your recorder running, so it's recording now the white noise, and then you speak, and then you let the recorder or the tape run without any sound from you for, let's say, 2 minutes. Then you speak again, and then you let it run for 2 minutes, then you speak again and let it run for 2 minutes. So the whole thing, you might do it for 10 minutes. You might do it for 6 or 8 minutes. At the end of that, you play back. And you hear your own voice, of course, you hear the white noise, and if you are very fortunate, and I'll play one or two little examples in a moment, you get a voice, get a sound of some kind. Later on, when you become more sophisticated, you can use actually sound software such as SoundForge, which actually then shows you the sine wave of sound, and then you see a sudden peak, and you know that there's a voice there, even if you weren't able to hear it first time. So you can replay that little peak of sound until, if there is anything there, you might be able to detect it. So this is one of Annabella's early EVP voices. That's Annabella talking. I'll explain afterwards. You hear it? Hear it? I'll explain what was happening. First of all, you hear Annabella telling one of her dogs to go out of the studio. The dog had come into the studio, and she is telling the dog to go out, and then you hear this little voice say, "Doggy, doggy." Play it again. This is Annabella. Get it? Hear it? Now that is a particularly interesting little EVP because it shows that the communicators actually know what is going on in the studio. And there have been other occasions then where these sorts of details have been given. For example, on one occasion, Annabella came in from the garden and her hands were rather dirty and the voice said, "Clean hands." Another occasion, she had just appointed a new maid and the voice gave the name of the new maid, including her middle name, which Annabella didn't know, when the woman came into the room. So it does appear And I will give examples of some of the messages that we've received later on, because they throw an awful lot of light on the nature of the next world. So the communicators seem to know what is going on in our world, and indeed they claim to do so. They claim that they do know what's going on, and that they, during at least the recording sessions, they can watch what's happening. But they always stress that it's very difficult for them, very difficult. And even if you're getting results, you may find that you have a fallow period of 6 months when nothing happens. Even this happened to Batchy after we took the radios out of his radio. Obviously, the communicator was not at all happy about this. And for months after that, he got nothing. Poor old Batchy, he was really upset about this. And maybe we shouldn't have done that. Maybe we shouldn't have taken the valves out. But he did give his permission for us to do so. And I know with Dr. Cardoso that she will go through long periods. And as for me, well, I go through very lengthy periods indeed when nothing happens. And I'll come back to that, the question of why some people get better results than others. We'll return to this shortly. So let's just play one of her other EVP voices. Let's get rid of this.
Amigos da ZVP,
Annabella.
Friends of the EVPs, you see that we have a guest tonight. Would you like to leave a message for him?
Remember that with EVPs, you don't hear what's being said until you rewind the tape later on. So she asks, we have a guest here, would you like to leave a message for him? And there is then a voice that leaves a message. I'll tell you what it says in a moment. It's in Portuguese.
Amigos da ZVP. Friends of the EVPs, you see that we have a guest tonight. Would you like to leave a message for him?
It's say parla. Say parla. Which means I know how to talk. Know how to talk. It's Portuguese. Know how to talk. Well, as a consequence of this early work in EVP, Annabella Cardoso established the journal, the ITC journal. I'll give the reference towards the end. She established the ITC journal, of which I'm associate editor, and we print all sorts of accounts from researchers all over the world. One of the amazing things is the quality of some of the work that's being done. I have to stress later on that it requires tremendous patience. You can go for weeks, months, before you start to get your first voice even. And I guess a lot of people bail out after the first few weeks when nothing happens. But there are many, many cases of people who've actually been trying for voices for 1 or 2 years. In fact, Sam Alsop, you know, I mentioned his book earlier on, Whispers of Immortality. Poor old Sam, he'd been trying for ages and he was getting nothing. And then he said, virtually in exasperation, you know, I'm going to try just once more. And on that final occasion, it happened. There are stories about this in mediumship, of course. There was a couple who had been sitting for 2 years and getting nothing, and they said, well, all right, we're not going to sit anymore. This is the last thing tonight. And then they began to get physical phenomena, things moving around in the room and so on. So it does seem as if one's patience is being tried all the time. But also, with these voices, the ITC voices, they tend to say that they choose who they're going to work with. They choose who they're going to work with. So it may be the degree of commitment on the part of the researcher that plays a big part in this. And if they're not going to work with you, then maybe you could try for years and you would get nothing. I don't know. But what are the benefits of ITC? Why do all this stuff? Because believe me, it's terribly time-consuming, and if you're listening to an awful lot of white noise, it can drive you crazy almost. So why do it? Why do it? And I've been involved in work with mediumship, certainly work with physical phenomena, which is very spectacular and very dramatic. But even there, you'll sometimes have sessions after session where nothing happens, and then suddenly it'll happen again. And so you have to be patient. You have to have an open mind. You have to think, maybe this is true. You don't have to think it is true, but just maybe it's true. So the mind is kept sufficiently open. if you decide in advance that it can't happen, then it probably won't happen. Well, what are the benefits then? Why do all this? Well, first of all, anybody can try. The equipment required is very, very little. The best thing to use now is one of these little digital voice recorders. And I always play the voices through the computer, so that you're getting playback through the computer, and I use a little microphone which I plug into the voice recorder rather than using the internal microphone, and then a source of white noise. So we're talking about a source of white noise, a little radio if you like. We're talking about a digital voice recorder. You needn't really play it through your computer if you don't want to, but it does make the sound clearer. And a little microphone which you plug into your voice recorder, which does mean that you're more likely to capture sounds. That's all. So this is the sort of equipment that many people would have already. That's the first thing. You don't need to go to a medium. You don't need to spend a long time developing mediumistic abilities, even if we can do that. Anybody can try it. So that's the first thing. Regular commitment is necessary, but only a little amount of time on each occasion. Maybe you just do 10 minutes. But you should do it regularly. You should do it, if you like, every evening at a certain time, or even once, twice a week at a certain time, but and on a certain day. And you're far more likely to get results if you're consistent like that. If you just do it when you feel like it, you're not going to get anything. Mediumship doesn't appear to be necessary. My view is that it is necessary, that a degree of mediumship is necessary. But Annabella Cardozo and other researchers take a different view, know that it's not necessary. And as I said a moment ago, the communicators say we are the ones who decide. We decide who we're going to work with. And I suppose if they decide they're not going to work with you, then they won't, however hard you try. I don't know. Also, the results are objective. We've heard a few results now, and they are perfectly objective. You can actually hear them. So we are creating, in a sense, what's called a permanent paranormal object, a PPO, which is part of the holy grail of psychical research. You've got an object there which is paranormal and which is permanent, and which then anybody can listen to in this case. If it's a visual object, of course, if it's, you're getting something on the television screen or whatever, and you're able to capture it on the video, something that they can see visually. But there is a permanent paranormal object there. And I'll play in a moment a rather more lengthy example of what I consider is one of the best permanent paranormal objects that we've got, certainly in this work. Next, the voices can actually be acoustically analysed. We're working with a colleague in Italy, Daniel Goulin, who is the consultant to the Italian Courts of Justice on voice and image analysis. In other words, his work involves listening to the tape recording, let's say, of a telephone conversation, which the police have taken by bugging somebody's phone, and then has to analyse the voice and then compare it with the person's real voice to say, is this the person who's in the dock? Is this the same voice as the criminal or whatever who's on trial? If it isn't, well, then obviously the evidence is weakened. So he does a lot of this work, and he's very involved in ITC. And so he's been able to analyse a lot of these voices to see if they contain qualities that are not present in the human voice, or to see if they lack qualities that are present in the human voice. And the results, although they're preliminary, we need far more evidence. Again, this is terribly time-consuming. I mean, it takes him hours to analyse a small sample of voice. But the preliminary results we have show that these paranormal voices lack characteristics which are present in the human voice to such an extent, in fact, that the human voice cannot duplicate them. We can copy them, we can apparently make the same noises, but the acoustic analysis will pick out that this is not exactly the same as the paranormal voice. This work has been done in other areas outside the paranormal. You can have birds that mimic human voices so absolutely accurately that people can be taken in. It sounds like a human voice. You analyse it and it's not a human voice. There are significant differences. And the work that we're doing at the moment on this does suggest that these voices are indeed not human voices. So they can be acoustically analysed, and if we can get really good results acoustically analysed, and then if we can send the results to independent research organisations who are not told in advance that they are paranormal, and we still get the same results, then this is very, very strong evidence for the paranormality of the voices. Very strong evidence. Well, I'm going to play just one more voice, because this, I think, is one of the best examples, one of the best examples that we have of a permanent paranormal object. What I'll do here, actually, I'll play it, first of all, as it came through, and then I'll play it again with Annabella's voice, and she will translate it as we go through so that you will hear what's being said. Well, here it is first. This is the voice as it came through by direct radio voice.
Sounds from
Annabella. Carlos de Almeida, who was one of the most consistent communicators that Dr. Cardoso has had. He doesn't communicate now. We've been told that he's moved on. And this is an interesting thing. Why could he communicate so well when other people, other communicators, really can't do it in the way that he could? Why is it? Well, what is the quality in the communicator that may play a big role here as well? So that they can't all do it. Anyway, let me play the same thing again, and Annabella will actually tell you what he says in Portuguese, and she will translate it into English. So let's listen to it again.
The anomalous voice says, translation, we are listening to everything. We want to know about the world. We want to hear your things. Estamos a ouvir tudo. Queremos saber do mundo. Queremos ouvir vossas coisas. Now we shall count on you. Offer what is just. Agora vamos contar convosco. Oferecer o que é justo. I was not the one who spoke, but I suppose you have made a question. Eu não fui este quem falasse, mas supongo que você tenha feito alguma pergunta. This is very and very difficult. Isto é muito e muito difícil. Another world. Outro mundo.
You could probably catch that last bit, outro mundo, which was reasonably clear. But we'll play this through just once again and see if you can pick up, when she's given you the Portuguese, see if you can pick up at least just one or two words here and there.
The anomalous voice says, translation, we are listening to everything. We want to know about the world.
We want to hear your things. Estamos a ouvir tudo. Queremos saber do mundo. Queremos ouvir vossas coisas. Now we shall count on you. Offer what is just. Agora vamos contar convosco. Oferecer o que é justo. I was not the one who spoke, but I suppose you have made a question. Eu não fui este quem falasse, mas supongo que você tenha feito alguma pergunta. This is very and very difficult. Isto é muito e muito difícil. Another world. Outro mundo.
Annabella's book, which will be out very, very shortly, is called Electronic Voices, Contact with Another World. And she has actually made a CD, which goes with the book, and bought separately from the book, but it's a companion to the book. And she gives some of these voices. I think she uses that one on it as well. So that is, in a sense, an account, precise account, of her work, how she developed it, her methods, what she uses, and the results that she has obtained. And as I was saying earlier on, here is somebody who, she was a Portuguese chargé d'affaires in India and in Japan. She was consul general in the United States. And to throw all this away in the interests of ITC, well, it does show the amount of commitment that is actually being put into this work. Well, we were talking about the advantages of ITC. What are the disadvantages? Well, first disadvantage, of course, you need an awful lot of patience and you need a very good ear and you need to spend time developing your ear, developing the quality of your hearing. It's easy to be deceived by voices in white noise. This is what skeptics say straight away. You play white noise and everybody's going to think they hear voices in it. Well, are people so daft? Are researchers so daft to be taken in by that? One of our first year undergraduate psychology experiments is to play white noise to students and say, there are voices there, what can you hear? And obediently, they'll all hear voices. It's pure imagination. But of course, you can get around that, as I said earlier, by, if you like, choosing your white noise from a source that does not contain voices, just contains the full spectrum sound. Then stray radio transmissions, you're picking up stray radio transmissions. Well, if you're picking up stray radio transmissions, you make a note of them and then you make sure that you discount that particular session if there are stray radio transmissions. But it depends where you pick up your white noise. And as I was saying earlier, you can easily, one of these little transistor radios, you can doctor it so it won't pick up radio transmissions. It's just producing radio static. There can't be any stray radio transmissions there. And when you get voices that are specifically relating to you, like the how are you example that I played early on, like references to names, when I've been in Batchy's studio, I've been called by my own name, very, very, very clearly indeed in English. When you get direct answers to questions, as Annabella was getting there in that intercourse with Carlos de Almeida, these cannot possibly be stray radio transmissions. The messages are short. Well, EVP messages are short, and dialogue is impossible, really, because you have to ask your question, let the tape run or the recorder run, and then rewind it and play it back. So you can't have the intercourse that comes through normal conversation. But you can, of course, if you are lucky enough to get direct radio voices. And in her case, and I think in most cases of people who get direct radio voices, they start spontaneously. This was Bacci's case. He got thousands of EVPs, and then one day, when he was tuning his old valve radio, which is used throughout, tuning this old valve radio, he spends about 20 minutes before you even start a session, just turning the knob and tracking across the short waveband until he finds what he thinks is a good source of white noise without any interference, and then he'll play that, and it may be another 20 minutes before you get the first voice. But he was simply getting white noise to use the EVP, and then, to his amazement, he heard a voice actually directly using his name and speaking to him. And then once that spontaneous first contact is made through direct radio voice, then usually it develops after that. But it's always said you shouldn't start by trying to get direct radio voice, because it is a pretty rare phenomenon, and there are only a few people who can consistently get the direct radio voices. Well, I asked a moment ago, what's the purpose of ITC? And I said, well, yes, it's a permanent paranormal object. Now let me come on to what I think is the most important part, and that is the evidence for survival. And you can choose, because I will give you in a few moments some examples of the messages that have come across. You can choose whether you think that these messages are coming from people who know what they are doing, or whether they are sort of things that one might pick up telepathically from other people's minds and which tend to be very confused. Survival is the natural law. This is one of our communications. Survival is the natural law. All beings, animals, plants, and humans survive physical death. All beings, animals, plants, and humans survive physical death. It does not depend on the moral conditions or the ethical or religious values of those concerned. I think it's worth stressing that these people, actually, they're not omniscient, as with mediumship. People, I think, they will give you the information that relates to their experience in the next world. But that does not mean that their experience is general for everybody. So one always has to be a little bit careful as to how one interprets messages of this kind. In the next world, another message, all beings are equal. Even animals and plants can communicate. Even animals and plants can communicate. Well, that must be a reference to some kind of telepathic communication, obviously. But there are, and there have been many examples played to me, of apparently communications from animals, which just a single word or two, which is obviously, I suppose, if animals do survive death, and if they're able to communicate telepathically in some way, then this might be translated into a voice sound. What the procedure is to do this on the other side of life, goodness alone knows. Their world is very similar to our world, but much more beautiful. Very similar to our world, but much more beautiful. It does sound to me, from communications like that, and we have many of them, that they are talking about what is called the plane of colour, which is about the fourth stage of the afterlife. I try in this recent book, Beyond Death, What Might We Expect, to bring together some of the information that we've received, not just from ITC, but primarily from mediums, on the nature of the other life. And the voices themselves tell us that one of the best books on this is Geraldine Cumming's book, The Road to Immortality. How many people have read The Road to Immortality? Yes, good. It's Geraldine Cumming's, and she was receiving the voice of Frederick Myers, who was one of the founders of the Society for Psychical Research. And I make a lot of reference to this in my book, Beyond Death, because it does seem that idea of levels, that one progresses through different levels in the afterlife. Time doesn't allow me to go into details of this, but the levels concerned seem to be illusory at the lower levels. In other words, you tend to get rather what you expect. And it's very much a thought world, rather like a dream world, where you are creating, in a sense, part of your own reality. And then the highest of those levels is the so-called plane of colour, which is apparently an idealised version of this world, perfect version of this world. and then you move beyond that and you go into the levels, as the Buddhists call it, the formless levels, levels of pure consciousness, where this illusion is left behind. And we know that even this world is, of course, illusory in the sense that what we're experiencing here is not the ultimate reality of any object. We know that this desk is 99.999 whatever empty space, and what is not empty space is in violent motion, which is why it looks solid. And that if we look at even those solid bits in motion, we find that they are quantum events, and as we go into the atoms, then energy and matter appear to become the same thing. So that there really is no actual solid substance anywhere. It is said, I think on good scientific authority, that even all the people in the world would only occupy the space of about a sugar cube if they were really all the solid bits were all put together. So nearly everything is empty space, but it's also in violent motion. So this world is an illusion. We are co-creators of the reality of this world. And in the next world, it seems to be very much a continuation of this process, a kind of dream world where we are creating our own reality. But then at the top level of this world of illusion, you get this plane of colour, as Myers calls it, which is this idealised version of our world. And then beyond that, well, yeah, who knows? They say that their bodies are also material bodies, but are much more beautiful than they were when they were on Earth. Well, again, that does fit in with mediumistic communications, because people, when they appear to mediums, all seem to have gone back to their time in life when they were at their best, so to speak. A colleague of mine, senior lecturer in psychology, had a recent out-of-body experience. And when out of her body, she found that she was actually wearing the dress that she'd last worn 12 years ago when she had felt to be physically at her best, that somehow she had regressed to that time when she was younger. And those of you who've had experiences of seeing perhaps friends, colleagues, family who've died, often report that they look as they must have done years ago. When my mother was dying, she died just a few years ago, and she was having Peter Fenwick, I know, has talked to you about these deathbed visions, but she would say to me, David, who are all these other people in the room? Who are all these other people? And she would say on another occasion, David, who is that lady standing over there? And I would say, oh, that's very interesting, Mother. I can't quite see her. Could you tell me what she looks like? And then she would give a description, and it sounded very much like her mother, but as she was as a young woman, rather than as she was before she died in her 80s. And usually in these near-death experiences and in these deathbed visions, people tend to see people as they were. And the more that you work in this field, the more the experiences that you have. This, I think, is one of the rules, if there are rules, and goodness alone knows whether there are or not, but one of the practicalities, if you like, the more work you do, the more experiences you will have. But if you don't do the work, and if you don't go out and look for the experiences, then you're unlikely to have them. Some people spontaneously will anyway, but for the vast majority of people, no. Even working on one's dreams, the more you start working on your dreams, the more you may find that you are picking up events that are going to happen in the future, or that you might actually be having visitations from people who have died, and they will appear to you in dreams. I've only had this happen twice to me in my life, where in dreams I know that I've been in the presence of the departed. I know, absolutely, clearly, beyond a shadow of doubt. People will say, well, how do you know? Well, how do we know a great deal about ourselves? How do we know a great deal about our experience? There is a sense of knowing. I know. When I see a friend of mine, I know who it is. I know without a doubt that that is him or her. Well, only on two occasions. Some people have these things very, very often. I don't, unfortunately. I wish I did. Some people have them very often. But when they do happen to you, they leave a lasting impression, and you have not a shadow of doubt that you have actually experienced the departed, whoever it happens to be. The entities in the world, in their world, have extraordinary capacities. Well, that's okay. Yeah, we know that they probably do, like being in two places at once and so on, things of that kind. But then we are in dreams. These things happen to us in dreams. There's probably nothing that happens, at least in the lower levels of the afterlife, that don't happen to us in dreams. People sometimes say to me, yeah, well, I can't imagine an afterlife where you have, because we wouldn't have a body and so on. And I say to them, don't you have a body in your dreams? Aren't you physically present in your dreams? Well, yes, I am. I say, well, yes. Well, then you can be in a body without actually being physically present in it. Yes. Whether it's created by thought, whatever it is. But anyway, the more that we look at this stuff, the more we find that there's a consistency. In all the ITC work, there tends to be a thread of consistency that runs through it. The kind of messages that we have been getting seem to be pretty common amongst people who are being given details about the nature of the afterlife. I think when it comes to survival, it is very, very much a matter of two or three things happening. Firstly, some people seem to be born with an acceptance, an intuitive acceptance that life does not end at death. Well, that's not evidence, except it is for them. Then the other thing is the occasions when we lose loved ones and we appear to get communications. They may come through mediums or we may get them spontaneously. In my files, because I keep cases like this, I have interviewed people who have said that after a parent died, she came and stood beside them in the room. A friend I was interviewing quite recently about this. She was washing dishes and was suddenly aware of her mother standing beside her. She saw her as clearly and as solid as we see each other.